Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 37 for April 11th, 2010. Gigabit to the schnoz. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Business travel can kill your company's profits, so do more, save more, and travel less with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com/twig. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show that covers Google and the cloud. Our cloudy but always clear Gina Trapani is here.
Hello.
From smarterware.org and the author of The Complete Guide to Google Wave at completewaveguide.com. Hi, Gina.
Hi, great to be here today.
Good to see you. You won't be bored today. We're not going to talk about the iPad.
Well, a little bit.
But it'll be all negative, so that'll make you feel good.
Awesome. I need some affirmation.
We're going to have Jeff Jarvis's boxing video. Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, and former Claremont McKenna student.
Bye, yeah.
I'm going down to Scripps tomorrow to visit.
What's the latest?
Well, we're waiting. We got four schools. Has Jake decided?
We were at Rochester yesterday, and yeah. I think it's leading at the clubhouse turn. Rochester, the city, didn't do itself any service. It snowed.
Good. You want him to know what he's in for.
Yeah.
One of the schools Abby's considering, Bard, is also Upper New York State. And unfortunately, it's going to be gorgeous weather when she goes. But the good news is it's going to be like eight different flights she has to take to get there because she has to fly to Albany.
What are you rooting for, Dad?
I'm rooting for Scripps. But don't tell Abby that because she won't go if she knows. But, you know, I got an email from the IT director at Scripps. This is down in Claremont, California, down in L.A. County. It's a five-school consortium. Scripps is one of the five, Claremont five. And he's a fan. He's a listener. And he says, you know, we have gigabit to the pillow. I said, what? They have wired up all the students at Scripps for gigabit Ethernet in their dorm room.
That's it.
That's fantastic.
If it were me,
exchange operation to go there, but I'll do it.
If it were me, I'd be like, "You're done." But Abby goes, "Yeah, so what?" Yeah, okay. What else they got? So it's her. You know what? She's going to have to be there for 4 years. I write the checks, but she's going to have to be there for 4 years. So I guess she should choose. So we got a lot of stories to talk about, Jeff and Gina. It's just the three of us. We made some room for Howard Stern's IT guy.
He couldn't do it because he's coaching soccer, likely excuse, Jeff Schick. But I'm going to visit him on April 26th to get the full tour of what happens. And this week, in fact, I called into the Stern Show twice. Howard was going on again about us making fun of him for his OS.
He does never just says something once, does he? He's got a...
No. It's beating, he recycles.
It's beat a dead horse. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so I called back in, and we had a discussion about the iPad, by the way, and he said that he didn't see any use for it, and that went on. And the next day, Jeff Schick, the IBM guy for Lotus Notes, had to come into the studio, I think sent by his corporate betters, because he had to defend Lotus Notes against me. So, of course, I called in again and laughed at him. And so we're getting together on the 26th, and I'll see his full view, and I think we'll get him on the show.
Good. I wonder if he gets gigabit to the schnoz. If he doesn't, he's not a good IT guy. So, Jeff, you've posted a video, or you will soon. It's not up as we speak, but soon
it's
we'll...
up on YouTube, not on my blog yet. Okay. I saved it for you, Leo and Gina.
So, go to BuzzMachine.com to see Jeff's boxing video.
What the heck?
You're reboxing. You're not unboxing. You're sending back the iPod.
Reboxing.
Oh, Jeff.
I'm taking my iPad back to the store. It's not really out of dogma, though I do share some of Cory Doctorow's fears about the closed world that Steve Jobs is creating. Nor is it out of the product's limitations that I've complained about in my blog. It's going to get multitasking and other things. It's really just because I don't see a need for it. It's solving a problem that I don't think exists.
He says, by the way, sitting in front of a desktop and a laptop computer.
Actually, just a screen on my laptop.
Oh, that's the laptop. And then, of course, you have in your pocket, I don't know what, a Nexus One.
I have my iPhone.
And an iPhone.
And I have my
Apple. You're probably, you're device rich. You probably don't need.
I am.
You probably don't need anything more.
No.
This is disconcerting.
That's what my wife says.
To dissolve from Jeff to Jeff is very odd. I don't know which I should watch. So do you actually box it up
TV
in this video?
Yep. No, I've got a bigger, better TV right across there. Why watch it here? Is it Laptop Junior? Well, no, without that USB port especially, I can't do work on it. Is it my iPhone on steroids?
By the way, Jeff's wearing exactly the same outfit, so that's what's really scary.
No, I just don't see
it. You could lip sync this, Jeff. Just move your lips. Yeah.
So, I'm taking it back.
Wow.
Here's the reboxing.
I just love this. I love the look. I love the look back at the camera.
If you play this backwards, it would look like an unboxing.
Except I'd be more excited, not gross.
This is, this is my favorite part.
Get rid of those, of course.
He's cleaning the screen.
So there it is. My iPad is reboxed and ready to go back. I'll pay a $50 restocking fee.
Ouch.
But I'll consider that my early adopter's tax.
That's great, Jeff. You're taking a stand.
The Apple fanboys are already attacking me on Twitter and YouTube before I even tweeted it.
People take this stuff so serious. I mean, I think you're crazy, but it's your craziness. It doesn't hurt my feelings.
I'll confess now. The day could happen that there are some magnificent apps that come out that make me have to buy it back again, and I'll do it and I'll admit it and be open about it. But I don't see a use.
I'm
just trying to make Gina feel good.
Yeah, you guys go ahead. That's fine.
Yeah, no, I'm with Jeff, though. If there are some killer, crazy iPad apps that are just I can't live without, I'll buy one. Sure. I mean, it's less about, like, politics. I'm not necessarily waiting for the Android pad, although that may be the case.
At first I thought Android would not work very well with this. And the more I think about it, I think an Android version of this would be pretty compelling.
Well, I'm going to get my hands on the Wii Pad in Germany next week.
And that's Android-based?
That's Android-based, two USBs, camera, and similar size. I think 6 hours battery versus 10 hours battery is what they say. They're announcing it formally on the 12th, and I'll give my speech in Berlin on the 13th, and I hope to have one in my hands.
Good. I'd love to hear what you think. I have a feeling we're going to have the same thing happen that happened with the iPhone, which is 3 years of iPad killers that are, you know, death warmed over. But we'll see. The Juju has been very disappointing to people. I think there's a reason not to have a file system, a camera, and a lot of complexity. Personally. I got one for my 80-year-old father-in-law. I think I'm going to give this one to my wife when my 3G comes. And she's a perfect example of somebody who has a notebook. But when she minimized email and saw the desktop, she said, "What's that? And what are all those little pictures on there?" I said, "Honey, those are icons of files you've saved to the desktop. What's the desktop?" She didn't know and didn't need to know. She didn't need a file system. You know, she just wanted the data to be there.
But I tried to get my wife to use the iPad just so I could have an excuse to keep it, and she would go nowhere near it.
You can't rebox something you're keeping, so that's good. We wouldn't have had a reboxing. I'm sorry.
Doesn't iPhone 4.0 involve folders and desktop wallpapers and that kind of thing?
It does.
Well, which I think means that Google pushed them in a few ways, which was useful for the marketplace. It pushed them to multitasking of a sort, though it's a weird kind of multitasking, and pushed them to folders and organization, small things. But I think competition is, God bless America, a wonderful thing.
It's very clear that almost all of what Apple did, or at least the seven tent poles Steve Jobs talked about in iPhone 4.0, all of them were in response to either Google or Amazon. You know, they're doing this iAd, which is basically ad mobs, right? They're going to do their own ad network. They're going to do multitasking. I'm not convinced that either multitasking or folders are a good idea. I think there is a lot to be said for a very simple platform in terms of ease of use. And I think one of the problems Microsoft's had with its phones is that it's Windows. It's tablets, that they're Windows. Amen. And that's, you can't shrink down a desktop operating system and expect it to work well. So we'll see. Time will tell. In the words of the bad local TV news reporter, only time will tell. What is the other big? I'm looking through all of our stories here. We got a ton of them.
Nothing huge this week, I would say, but lots of little stuff.
Yeah, most of the news.
I think Apple and ads is worth another second.
Let's talk about that. Yeah,
you know, I've tried in two shows now to get a conversation going up this, and I've failed each time.
Try one more time. Third time's a charm.
The shift from a browser-based, web-based architecture of the net to an app-based architecture of the net, I still have concerns about it. I think that it closes things in, and content companies think they're an application when they're not, but they're closing things in, and it cuts off search and discovery through search and discovery other ways. You have to get access to whatever this in this app, you've got to download and install an app, and that just, I think, balkanizes the web. Well, Apple's doing the same thing to an extent with iAds, because the ads will appear inside the apps. You will not click out. There'll be app-like experiences in the apps. And that's probably a good thing for the advertising. But what I see, the bigger thing I see happening here is, I should have seen this before. All people should have seen this before. But it really is a frontal attack on Google, with the control freak and the control addicts of jobs and media and advertising all in line. They don't want to be discovered by search. They wish they weren't discovered by search. They don't know what to do with people who come through search. And so they still think in a brand-centered world where you come to them and install their thing, buy their thing, stay in their world, and that's what this is. And, you know, maybe it is a big attack on Google. Maybe Google could lose a lot here.
I don't know. I'm not sure it's such a global thing. I mean, I think Apple wants to support developers. Developers say to Apple, we want to do free apps, but in order for us to do free apps, we want to be able to play ads in the apps. Apple doesn't want to leave that money on the table. AdMobs, the company Google bought, really was created to put ads in iPhone apps. So Apple's just saying, well, why should we let Google have that revenue? Why don't we create it? And, you know, here's where Apple has the upper hand. They've got the ecosystem for app developers, for distribution. If you add the third part, iAds, in, I think most developers just could say, well, it all kind of all goes together, and it's a push of a button. Why not? They also, by the way, announced a kind of a competitor to Xbox Live or PlayStation Live, a gaming, social gaming community. And I think it's the same thing. It's not so much they want to disable these other companies. It's just they don't want to leave the money on the table. Same reason Twitter bought Tweety.
Right.
Actually, that to me is more of a example of what you were talking about, Jeff. Because they're not going to charge for Twitter.
From Seismic was growling in Twitter or trying not to growl, but
Fred Davis kind of warned everybody a week ago. Fred Davis, the venture capitalist, Fred Davis, an old friend of mine. Fred Wilson.
ABC.com. Yeah.
Yeah. An early investor in Twitter warned everybody. He said, you know, don't start making money building stuff that Twitter could build. Obviously, he knew it was coming, because Twitter goes out and buys probably the premier third-party tweeting application and sends a signal to anybody who's making a third-party business on Twitter that maybe this isn't a good idea.
Right. I mean, the way Jake explained it to me was that basically if people search for Twitter on iTunes, they don't get Twitter.
Yeah, well, I think that's what it's about.
But isn't it a terrible signal to developers, Gina, that whereas Facebook did the opposite. Facebook killed its own applications,
right,
like Courses, which Jake rewrote then, in the belief developers would do a better job and to encourage development. Now Twitter is doing precisely the opposite.
You know, I don't have a problem with them buying Tweety. I think it makes a lot of sense for them as a business that people would search for the word Twitter in the App Store and get an app from them. I think the reality is that developers are going to work on applications that do things that Twitter proper doesn't. And I mean, sure. I mean, I think the expectation is that you build something that does something really cool, the company is going to use it. So Google this week released nested labels in Gmail as a Labs feature.
Finally.
And, yeah, which is fantastic. But, you know, there's a user script, a Grease Monkey user script developer, Arend VR. I'm just going to say VR because I'll massacre his last name otherwise, who wrote this Grease Monkey user script folder for Gmail like 2 years ago. And I've had it, excuse me, in my Better Gmail Firefox extension for like 2 years now. And it's one of the best features. So Manu, I think that's how you pronounce his name, who's the Google engineer who wrote the post, came to me last August and said, what do you think should be in Gmail Labs? And I said, well, obviously folders for Gmail should be in it. And now it is. And so, I mean, you could take that as kind of an affront to the developer, like, oh, you know, this, you know, Google just copied what this, you know, great developer did that users found really useful. I see it as like, first of all, it's an honor, I think, for Arendt, because you know what he wrote was valuable enough for them to use. And I also see it as a challenge to make more innovative things as a third party developer. I don't really have a problem with it.
I think this is a little different though, because for one thing, Twitter, you could totally ascribe all of Twitter's success, because there are a lot of Twitter clones, to its mm-hmm. API and the very quick adoption from third-party developers.
Definitely.
And the amazing variety that they created. Some of these developers are making a Twitter clients that they charge for. Tweety was mm-hmm. $2.99. Mm-hmm. If Twitter gives away one of the best clients for free, don't you think that's kind of a little up yours to all of these third-party developers who put Twitter on the map in the first place?
It raises the bar. It raises the bar. Your app has to do something better than Tweety does.
But Tweety's going to have access to the APIs. Well, this will be very interesting to watch. You know, this is historically an issue with the operating systems. If Microsoft, for instance, uses secret API calls that they don't document, they tell others not to use to give their software an edge, that's really anti-competitive. In fact, they can get in trouble for it. Mm-hmm. It would be very mm-hmm. interesting to see if Twitter
gives Tweety access to information and data, right, that other developers don't have. And
Twitter has a history of this, by the way. Twitter's Firehose, which is the single most valuable thing Twitter has, which is all the updates. Mm-hmm. It's very selective about who gets it. And many people who've asked for it legitimately are not allowed to use it.
Mm-hmm. I went to a conference called Foursquare, not related to Foursquare, where Foursquare appeared. A few months ago, it's run by a big Quadrangle, a big equity company in New York. And the investment guy was sitting there with Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn, Biz Stone of Twitter, and I think Chad Hurley. And a seminal moment for me was when he asked them, well, what company would you want to do a big distribution deal with? And they looked at him like they were confused dogs. You know, why would we do that? And they all said,
they don't get it.
Well, we have our people distribute us. And Biz was eloquent about how Twitter has become Twitter through its API and through the developers
right.
who've done it.
That's obvious.
And you know, listen, they bought a search engine. They bought from BetaWorks early on because it was a function they didn't have and they just truly, absolutely needed. Mm-hmm. And so, I in that sense, I agree with Gina. I understand the need for the core company to have something. But I do think that they could be hurting themselves with their key distributors, which is developers.
Well, watch closely, because if they do anything else along those lines, then that may, I mean, and Fred kind of implied they might. He basically.
Yeah, so why would you invest? So there are venture funds to work on apps for Facebook and iPad and iPod and, as far as I know, Twitter. What happens to the security of that investment? I think, you know, the other question I want to ask Fred is, okay, now if a company came to you making Twitter apps, knowing what you know, would you ever invest in them?
Yeah. Well, you're the developer, Gina. I mean, it's really you that this comes down to. Mm-hmm. If you were a developer of a third-party tweet app, say TweetDeck or Loic, Seismic, mm-hmm. would you feel, would this discourage you from further development?
Initially, it would make me sad and feel discouraged initially. But if you think it through, the fact is that if users who don't know the name Seismic and TweetDeck and these casual users are able to find a Twitter app in the App Store and get onto Twitter using Tweety, I mean, that just means more people are going to use Twitter. And it also, like I said, sets the bar. Tweety is a great app. Your app just has to do something a little better. If it means that more people are going to be using Twitter mobily and that they're going to say, this is great, but I wish that I had an app that did this other thing, then that's what you have to shoot for. So yeah, initially I'd be discouraged, but really I think it just makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense for Twitter as a business to offer to users. You know, I'm just IMing with Anil and he made a great point, which is like Twitter's audience is users. It's not developers. And I think this is a good thing for users. And I think that's a good thing for developers.
I think that's really the important point. And also not to go back to Apple, but I've been trying to ask myself whether the decisions that Jobs et al. Have made these last few weeks have really been for users or just control freakishness for business. You know, is keeping Flash off this platform a good thing? Not to be Google fanboy, but that's what they say their first consideration is.
You can make an argument, and this is Apple's smart enough to make sure this is the case. In every case, you can make an argument that it's for the user. Whether it is or not, I don't know. It may just be a happy coincidence that what's good for the user is good for Apple.
Right. I mean, listen, I'm a developer who's working on a Twitter project that threads your replies, you know, according to status. That is a feature that Twitter could launch any day. They have the data. In fact, they've promised it, you know, in some of the API docs, they've said that they may do that at some point. You may be able to click on a status and see all the replies directly related to that status. That's what my app does. Would I be bummed if they launched that and kind of obviated the need for my app? A little bit at first, but then I would say, okay, well, what can I do even better than they do by default?
Fred,
and that's what every developer has to be doing.
Fred Wilson in his blog, I think if you're a Twitter developer, you read Fred carefully right now. Because Fred is basically, whether intentionally or not, becoming the lighthouse, the beacon for, well, where do you go now? And he wrote a recent post, very interesting post. He says, the Twitter platform's inflection point, in which he really likens Twitter to an operating system, to a platform like Macintosh or like Windows.
That's what he invests in, Fred, yeah.
Yeah. And he says, if you know, it's clear if you can build large businesses on top of a social platform like Twitter, and because Twitter is so open and lightweight, and here's where you want to italicize if you're a developer, I'm surprised there aren't more new kinds of killer apps. Here are some places where I might think we'd see these killer apps emerge. I think Twitter's using Fred, or maybe Fred's using Fred, to send a message. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, don't write a desktop client, but you might want to write this.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a chirp this week, so I'm going to talk to quite a few developers, I hope, and I'll be interested to hear what they think.
But the question is, do you trust Twitter now? I mean, what's to stop them as soon as you create a social, he's talked about social gaming, which, by the way, sucks on Twitter. Nobody wants you to announce how many people you've killed an iMob on Twitter. Please,
no more
stop.
Mayors.
Oh, I was recently made a super mayor on Foursquare. I better take that tweet away. Verticals, like Stock Twits. And FlixUp, Enterprise, and Discovery. I think Discovery is, you know, obviously a very interesting thing. But remember, Twitter bought the search, you know, tool and analytics. And I think Twitter's in all of these spaces a little bit, or not in all of them, but the last two for sure.
Yeah, I got to push Fred, because a few months ago when I complained about something that Twitter didn't do in terms of being able to put, I think we talked about the show early on, the hashtags together in new ways. And Fred, you know, kind of slapped me around and said, that's what the developers are for, Jeff. That's what outside developers will do. That's how this works. And
yeah, and then if it's good, we'll take it.
Well, but we'll take one of them, and everybody else gets flicked off.
Yeah. Yeah, one of you wins. Now, maybe that's not a bad thing. I don't know. A lot of people build apps to get bought by Google.
I mean, that's life. I mean, right? I mean, you know, there's always a group of people doing something. And then there's like the one chosen one who, out of luck or circumstance or knowing the right person, you know, gets. I mean, that's kind of, I don't know. That's kind of the reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why I ask you, because you're a developer. And so you're saying, as a developer, it's understood. Yeah, it's understood.
I take it as a challenge. I take it as a personal challenge to do it better than the thing that they bought or built in.
Yeah.
Personally.
Well, except. You wouldn't, I think, build an iPhone app now because the chances of getting discovery and traffic have reduced markedly.
You'd build an iPhone app. Of course you'd build an iPhone app. Well, you'd build an iPad app as well. But don't you think you'd want to? I don't think the gold rush for iPhone apps has died out at all.
I mean, for Twitter.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Yes.
Just for Twitter.
I mean, I'd build an analytics app for Twitter. I mean, I would do a different kind of app. I wouldn't do just a regular client app.
I still think, as my friend Steve Gilmore has always said, that search and tracking are the key uses of Twitter. You've got this huge database of information that is not well mined. I mean, that's what you do. That's what your application does, Gina.
That is what I'm working on. And in fact, I have a little plug for this week. The Twitter project that I work on called Think Tank is going into action this week. Everyone who's listening to Twig right now, please, who's on Twitter, go on Twitter and follow White House, at White House. White House is going to put out a question this week about the nation's technological and scientific priorities, what they should be. And if you reply to those questions on Twitter, my app is going to collate those replies and the White House is going to listen to you. Basically, the White House is going to be watching and listening and keeping track of what people reply using my app. So I hope everyone will follow White House right now. And then in the next few days, Monday through Wednesday, there will be a question put out. And if you reply to that question, I hope you break my database.
You got 1.7 million people who could respond to this, so that's great.
Yes, yes, we do. Yes, we do. I'm a little nervous. I have to tell you, it's a pretty surreal feeling knowing that you know, something that you started as a hobby is being used by the White House. It's a little. I haven't gotten very much sleep the last couple of nights.
How exciting, Gina!
Yeah,
this
it's
is
really
so
really
cool.
exciting. So yeah. Just kind of an example of something that you can do that Twitter doesn't do right now. I mean, hey, but like I said, Twitter could launch threaded replies pretty easily any day now.
Right.
And I accept that, but my app does more, so.
Right. I also think that if I put myself in Ev and Biz's shoes, they actually played this pretty well. So they created this really trivial idea, which is kind of group text messaging, I guess.
Right.
And with follows. And who knew where it was going to go? I don't think anybody knew it was going to go where it went. But it became, thanks to their very open API and the enthusiasm of third-party developers, it became this great value and a huge growth, a valuable database of information. And now the fun and interesting thing to think about is how you can use this information. And it seems to me that even if Twitter got very active in creating answers to that question, there's plenty more.
There is. The possibilities are
endless.
Insane. They are endless. They are endless.
And only get better as the data gets richer. And it's growing astronomically. And it's what's very interesting is it's growing globally faster now than it is in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really I've really thought of this for the last year or so as a analog to an internet nervous system. It really is. It's all these connections. And the more that just as the brain is good because it's nonlinear, it's heavily parallel. Twitter is like that. It's these very rich interconnections. They're much more than linear, and there's so much information in there because of it.
So should Google have done Buzz ever at all? I mean,
yes. I wish they do it better.
Absolutely. I think, I think Buzz brings value to the table too. I mean, some people really love Buzz and use it a lot. I mean, I think I don't think that we want to have one single place.
You know why I'm glad they did Buzz and I wish Buzz were doing better is because Twitter is a silo ultimately. Even if they've got APIs and they encourage third-party developers, acquiring Tweety just underscores the fact that ultimately it is a single company and who controls the data as much or as little as they want.
Yep.
Whereas if you have and Google could be the same, but what they did has open is open standards, open, it's federable, and could in theory, and I hope it will in practice, become something that is much bigger than any one company, becomes in fact a standard. That's what we want, right? We want dial tone.
That's exactly right.
So Twitter could never be. Twitter wants to be the dial tone, but it's one company. I don't want one company to control the internet dial tone.
So, absolutely agree. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So if it's going to be the internet nervous system, it's got to be in many hands. It's got to be open to anybody who wants to play. And you should. And then if Twitter comes along, and then if you know somebody, but Google comes along and says, "Well, we anoint this as the definitive third party buzzing tool." In fact, Google did create a buzz widget. It doesn't matter because that's just one view into a much larger universe.
Have they announced that Buzz will become federated?
Federation was, in theory, part of the.
It was part of the original. I thought.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I knew it wasn't Wave. I wasn't sure that Buzz. That was true.
No,
with
no.
Buzz.
I believe it is the case. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and we have a lot of very smart listeners who are paying attention to this. But it's my understanding that while they, you know, the API is very scant, and they haven't even given enough information to write a third party app yet. But that because of Salmon. Because of the various different, you know, REST and so forth APIs that they plan to implement or will implement, you could write a Buzz clone.
That's fantastic. That's huge.
That would interoperate.
It's part of the thing about Wave that I love, the fact that it's federated and that you don't necessarily ever have to go through Google servers to communicate using it.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Huge, huge.
Very important. Otherwise, it's one company. And we've learned. I think we've learned.
Central board of failure. Yep.
I hope we look back on the '90s in a couple of decades as the stupid time when there were two operating system companies,
right.
And that was, and that you had to choose, and that's just dumb.
So you love that things will sort of come full circle. Remember back in the day when there was like a mainframe computer, and that was your one central point of failure,
right.
And then you know the web, and now we're kind of back to this point where we have these cloud services, which are becoming the central point of failure and contact. Yeah, we need to go back to that peer to peer. Data sharing.
And to by the way, Buzz, somebody's saying Buzz was Google only. That's true. They're not going to have a Buzz server that I could run, as you could have a Wave server that you could run.
Okay.
But the standards are there so that I could have a server that would interoperate as a peer with Buzz.
I see.
So that's what to me is federation. I don't have to use the Buzz server. In fact, it's better that I don't have to use the Buzz server, but I can use industry standard APIs to communicate as a peer with Buzz.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, yes, I see what you mean.
And you know, one would hope that would happen with Twitter as well at some point. But see, this is where the Twitter company is not exactly as open as I'd like. They don't give you the fire hose. They don't give, you know, you have limited API calls. If you're Facebook, Facebook won't let you store the data for longer than 24 hours. There's all these, right. These companies are really nervous about letting go of their assets.
Well, and Jobs, not to go back to him, but he's you know.
Well, this gets back to
that. Example
now,
of that.
I don't think Jobs is any is much more closed than any of these. I mean, you do have a full browser on here, and you've got WebKit, and the iPhone 4.0. They announced you can't develop with anything but Apple tools, which I'm sure is have developers up in arms.
They are up in arms.
Yeah,
and adapting from Flash is verboten, right?
And you know, certainly it's in Apple's business interest. They've decided that they don't want Flash, and they're going to kill Flash. But it's also for a user's point of view, because as everybody knows, these kind of, phony APIs or phony interfaces are never quite as good as the native interface. You know, the Java swing is never quite as good as the native interface. And that's basically what Apple's saying is, no, you got to use the native interface from us.
Eric Schoenfeld wrote a piece at TechCrunch this week that it's on the feed.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Is Steve Jobs ignoring history or trying to rewrite it? And he's arguing that he sees ghosts of the 90s in this effort, that in this world now, Google is Microsoft getting its operating system various stripes out everywhere, and Apple is doing its quality shtick and controlling mightily and asking whether he's limiting himself too much again.
I've been thinking about this a little bit because, you know, Apple did not believe in apps. I think when the iPhone came out, remember, there was only web applications.
As Jake said to me this morning, remember that it was a really dull phone.
It was horrible. And everybody wanted apps. And I think Apple is, you know, it happens again and again in the industry. Apple didn't know that apps was going to be the next big thing and just said, okay, well, we'll let you have apps. And suddenly it's the next big thing. And so now they're capitalizing on it.
I mean, Apple believes in whatever it offers at the time. They didn't believe in copy and paste for a long time.
Exactly.
Either. I mean, let's be honest.
No, but I'm not. But I'm saying you can't give them credit that they knew about apps. They planned apps, and then they came along, and it just took a little while. I don't think so. I think they didn't believe in apps. I think that they just as you know, Palm kind of wanted to push web apps as well. And frankly, that's the open. Isn't that the open thing that you were just talking about?
The irony is the apps are what. Give him the control that he wants.
But this is my point. If all Steve Jobs wanted was control, he wouldn't be pushing web apps. He would have pushed apps from day one. He didn't know apps were going to take off. He thought it was going to be web apps, the open standard. He believed
the Google way.
He supported the open web. And this is why the market is very interesting. The market doesn't have this political agenda that you and I, we do. It doesn't know open from not open. It just uses what it likes. Happens to like apps. So I don't know if you blame Steve Jobs for this. Steve Jobs just goes, oh, you want apps? Great. Good for us. We'll take 30% everything. But I don't know if he planned that. I don't think he did. I think we look back at the last few years in 10 years from now, we're going to say, what was the big development? Apps. Or maybe not. Maybe we'll look back and say, God, wasn't that awful? How do we go to, like with CD-ROMs, how do we go down that road?
Well, that's what I'm keep trying to figure out the right way to ask the question, Leo. Yeah, I sense something bigger here in this whole app thing that is an architectural shift in the web. Just as I was arguing that we're moving past a page-based, site-based web and things get distributed in streams and flows, the app movement is precisely 180 degrees the opposite.
I agree with you. But would you disagree that this is what the market has asked for?
In those devices, no, I absolutely agree.
So who do you blame? You blame Steve or the market?
I don't know that I blame anyone. I just want to see what the implications are and figure out what the, both the opportunities and risks are.
I'm not too worried because, look, I don't think the open web is going to go away because everybody likes apps.
I don't either. I mean, there's room for both, right? We want both. I mean, the issue that I have with the issue that I have is I can't navigate to a web page or a market and download an app that a developer has posted without Apple getting involved in the middle. That's the issue.
Yeah.
You're not against apps. Right. No, I'm against the fact that I can't install whatever I want on my phone. That's the problem.
Exactly. That's one, Gina. The other one is that inside that app is information and data that you can't get to, that you can't search via Google, you can't link to.
Right.
That's trapped in that app. And that's in the interest of the app maker, it would seem. But if you think in a distributed web at the same time, you want to expose that data. And how do you do that?
So to defend...
And maybe that's Google's failing, that Google hasn't been searching the guts of apps for the last 2 years.
But these are all abstractions that we're aware of, but that the end user couldn't care less about. And I think one of the things that's going to appeal to end users about the iPad is they don't have to think about where their data is. It's not an issue.
No, but look at this way, Leo. If I leave all my restaurant reviews and all my restaurant data and everything else in Foursquare versus Yelp, in Yelp, I can become the new restaurant critic of the world. In Foursquare, as I understand it, I don't think it can be discoverable.
Right.
Right? That's the kind of issue. So that there's an implication of my actions. I'm investing my effort into something, into a space where I don't know what's necessarily going to mean to me and my value.
So, again, I'm playing the pure pragmatist and not an intellectual purist here at all. And I'm a completely,
I thought it was Gina's role today.
Well, I'm completely in agree with all, you know, I agree with you about all this. But from a purely pragmatic point of view, then... Doesn't the market force Foursquare to open this up? Because really the value to Foursquare is the network effect.
I hope so. And I think, or more to the point, not that the market forces it, but Foursquare is the first to see the opportunity.
That's where the value is.
That's where the value is.
So ultimately, as long as there's value in openness and you get the network effect, as long as there's value in federation, Twitter's going to get moved towards federation. Unless they have this monopolistic Rupert Murdoch, we got to play the Rupert Murdoch clip. This monopolistic Rupert Murdoch attitude towards the world, the trend is our friend, is it not? So in a way, maybe this is just the natural ecosystem. You get an entrepreneur who's going to. It's like the patent system. You get for 16 years, you get to benefit, but then eventually it's got to open because it can't grow beyond a certain point as long as one company's doing it.
Right. So if you're Google, shouldn't Google have been seeing this coming more and trying to push app makers to say, here's a standard by which you can make your app stuff discoverable and we can search it and we can do this and that? They've been doing that with content companies, media companies, but not with these app makers that are the future of media. The irony to me is...
If I'm Google, I sit back and say, don't worry, they'll come around.
Maybe. Yes. Okay, fine. Because you're Google. But that's part of what I'm saying is maybe Google's not Google anymore. In this shift of the world, maybe Google does lose the path to stuff. You'll hear Rupert Murdoch in a second. You heard Steve Jobs more than anyone saying, search. People don't do search.
I know. I thought it was so funny that he said that.
And Google came back and argued, well, yes, here's our numbers. Yes, they do. And what's search? You know, is search Google goggles and all that?
Right. I have to say, I think Google's getting a little into the weeds. And for instance, they've made a big mistake by becoming so attached to the Nexus One and the Android.
I think there's a risk for Google here. Here I am, Google fanboy, saying, "Watch out, Google!" I think there's something going on here that's bigger than they necessarily see.
They said the right thing when they said, "Oh, all we care about is you use the internet more and we benefit." If they would just stay there and say, "We're just going to keep doing things that make you use the internet more."
Exactly.
I think their model is great. As soon as they get in the weeds and say, "Yeah, but we really want to win the app war," it's like, no, that's a mistake.
No, they don't, because they're in channel conflict with the whole web.
Yes.
And, you know, to me, the interesting thing is what media companies have done versus tech companies. Media companies, content is not an application. The only reason to do an application like Tang Magazine is to put a wall around your content.
I agree.
If you don't do anything more, it is not a friggin' application, people. It's just a page.
Well, wait a minute now. Play devil's advocate. Popular Science did this great app, and maybe they didn't do anything you couldn't do with HTML5. I don't know.
I actually found it to be a bit bothersome.
I can't. I can't even figure out how to use it, to be honest.
See, I couldn't.
What? Okay. I heard the
Bob's iPad. It was CD-ROM, like, man.
Okay, it's kind of there's kind of no UI.
Yeah,
it's like, what do I do? And this is actually, if I would say there's a problem with the iPad, that's the problem, is that the UI is not particularly discoverable. You gotta keep kind of swiping and doing things until something happens.
Familiar.
That's not good.
This sounds familiar.
You know what? I deleted Android. The pop site. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, June.
I think I deleted the PopSci app because I got so frustrated.
The dichotomy that we're talking about is Chrome OS versus Android, right? Chrome OS is just web apps.
I need help with that.
What's that, Jeff?
So I need help with that. So when you talk about Chrome OS and Google seeing a web app-based world, is that different from what Apple sees in essence?
I think it is different. And I think that Google doesn't know what the answer is. And I think that because Google has Android, which is apps plus a browser, and they have also Chrome OS, which is just a netbook operating system, right, that just accesses web apps, that they're trying to figure out the answer to the question themselves. I mean, don't you think that Chrome OS is going to look positively anemic next to the iPad operating system? I mean, it's like it's links to web apps. That's what it is.
I installed Hexa's Chromium, you know, thing. And it's like, well, what? This is it's just a browser.
It's a browser, right?
Where else? Where's the rest of it? You know, I'm like, right.
Stay there for a second. Then what we're saying here is that we're shifting. Granted, they'll both be around, but in terms of where the sex is and where the attention is and where the money is thought to be, people think it's suddenly they're following the shiny object of the apps rather than the browser. And the browser was the standard that tied all information together through a simple address and link, and we're now losing that.
Well, you know, by the way, there are apps that this should be apps. There are plenty of apps where you're not, you know, you're playing a game or you're not creating data or you're not, you don't need it to be searchable. There are plenty of places for apps to exist. So let's say that that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about
functions like writing your text.
Yeah. But we're talking about content encapsulated in that.
Right. And that's the funny thing about this is that you look at brands like, you know, Foursquare to Bank of America have made apps for Android, but the New York Times and the Guardian haven't. And I think that Android is a much bigger audience now than iPad, but they followed the shiny view to saying, well, what apps really mean is control for content. And so I guess I'm concerned not about apps as apps. Apps, you know, making me a good, cute word processor or maps or things like that. God bless. Bravo.
Well, I guess that was my question is, I guess I shouldn't have mentioned the Popular Science app. But what if there were you could do it in an app better than you could do on the web? Wouldn't that be a
show it to me, boss.
Yeah.
Show it to me.
Yeah, maybe.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
I thought the PopSci app was it. That was the one regret I had about the iPad was not having the PopSci. Everyone seemed to love it.
I've deleted it. I didn't realize I had it.
The hilarious thing about the Wall Street Journal app is that they now take the same exact content that I pay for on the web. They put little keys over half of it saying, no, you can have that. You have to pay us double now.
Well, here's an example. This is a free app called Big Oven. Epicurious has one as well. It is a recipe app, right? So I'm not sure it's any different than having. I mean, you could have done all of this in a browser. I don't think it's any different.
Back in the day, I helped create Epicurious.
Yeah.
Oh wow! Nice.
I mean, it's
Thank
pretty.
You. I love Epicurious.
Yeah, isn't Epicurious great?
Yeah. Add 2 tablespoons of olive oil.
So really, all you're adding here is a UI on top of.
You're trying to tart up content.
You're tarting it up. That's a very good way to put it.
What about the book that Jenny Jardin wrote up? It was a medical book with like 3D objects that you could. I don't know if it was
It's the Elements. Let me show you. This was originally a coffee table book. Talk about tarting up content. I mean, really, all you have here is the periodic table of the elements.
Mm-hmm.
They just crashed on me too.
I had a lot of that going on, by the way.
Yeah, a lot of quitting out, and I don't know if that's. Needs a restart. Yes, he's doing it again.
Oh, dope.
It happens a lot.
Anil is IMing me, and he just said to me, not a single person who has the PopSci app can name a story they read in it.
Right. It's pretty.
They play with it. They don't actually read
anything. This is
the
same thing. So this is Zinc, right? And if I could go to the next page, which I apparently can't because it has too many elements on it and it's crashing. It gives you rotating versions of this. There's an interface to Wolfram Alpha. So it's looking up Zinc on Wolfram Alpha. And then, but this is $14, and it's a coffee table book put into a app. And you know what? It's eye candy. I don't think it's particularly useful.
No, and it's expensive to do. And
this is a CD-ROM.
None of that is searchable. If you want to say, "Hey, kids, this is the best damn Zinc page I've ever seen," you can't link to it.
Right. You can't share it.
That's the tragedy.
Well, it's not the tragedy for the elements, because then you can say, "Pay $13.99," and you can see it.
Well, there's plenty of other elements pages. Maybe they don't rotate.
Yes, exactly.
Zinc hasn't changed, man.
Exactly. The content is not better on this. It's tarting it up. It's a perfect way to phrase that.
Right. So I think that what we see here is media companies think suddenly that they are software companies, and but all they really want is, hello, Rupert Murdoch, is they want a fence because they think that returns them to their old control.
Well, here's the good news, though, Jeff. It ain't going to work. You know that, and I know that. We laugh. We mock these people.
It's actually going to kill some media companies along the way. I really believe that. This is, as Richard Gingras, the CEO of Salon, said, it is a fatal distraction.
Yes. Well, that's well put. Which companies? That's their problem.
Accused of dancing on their graves. I'm actually not. I'm wishing they wouldn't kill themselves, but if they do, they do.
Yeah, really. If there's a message to what you're saying is don't do this because it's bad for you. Because ultimately, it's not bad for us because, frankly, it ain't going to work.
That's what I actually try to say to Mr. Murdoch, but he'll never listen.
Well, we're going to find out what Rupert... Let me see it one more time. I restarted the iPad. One more time. Let's see if it'll do it.
This is what you get when you buy first generation, kids.
No. It's a memory. It was a memory issue. So now it's working. And if you look at Gina, even as developer, you got to appreciate this. All of these spin independently.
Yeah, what does that teach me?
Nothing. It's just cool. And watch, they even degrade independently.
Cool. Yeah, ended in 2000, cool. Leo.
It's cool.
Damn near killed us.
It's like a CD-ROM. It's all
it is. A CD-ROM. That is the CD-ROM, analogy. I get it now. Yeah.
That's all. And I resisted buying this, and Jenny finally talked me into buying it. But you know, okay, nice, great, wonderful. But
I want to scream, Jane, stop this crazy thing.
Interesting. A lot more cynicism about the iPad this week.
No, don't you. You pry this out of my cold, dead fingers.
Gina, can we get him? After last week, I tried to get you to buy one. My mitzvah here is we try to get Leo to return his.
Hell no.
Hypnotize him.
How quickly things change in 7 days.
Oh, no. Don't misunderstand me. This thing, I hardly used anything else this week. I didn't use my laptop but twice. And that was for the kinds of things like Expedia, where you go online and you want to buy something. And it's a little hard to do all that in here. Mm-hmm. But for consumption of content, for gaming, for browsing, for email, I find this far superior. No, I hardly used a desktop or a laptop at all this year. Week. Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you again in like 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah, everybody says, oh, Leo, tire of it. It's just another gadget. I don't think so.
My son predicted that it would gather dust on the shelf.
Well, it's an interesting thought. And there's certainly a lot of people thinking that. And I have a feeling that it's going to go the other way. But we'll see. We shall see. We're going to listen to what Rupert said about Google and how wrong he got it in just a little bit. But let me pay some bills and then we'll continue on. You're listening to This Week in Google with Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org and Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com. And brought to you this week by GoToMeeting. Those friends at Citrix have done it again. They're the kings of remote access. They did the enterprise-level remote access that Windows uses. If you're in a business, you know what Citrix means. That's a big name. They do consumer-grade stuff, too, that's really fast, easy, simple, works on Macs and PCs, like Go to My PC and Go to Assist, and Go to Meeting. Go to Meeting eliminates the need for business travel. I mean, who can afford to fly across the country for an hour meeting or drive across town for half an hour? With Go to Meeting, you get more done. You meet over the phone, but it's still visual. You can still see the PowerPoint presentation, the product demo. You can still see the spreadsheets, collaborate together on documents. It brings any conference call up. Much more exciting, much more engaging, and it gets a lot more done with a lot less travel. And talk about affordable. $49 a month for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want, and that includes free voiceover internet and phone teleconferencing. Go to gotomeeting.com/twig. GOTOMeeting.com/TWIG. You could try this free for 30 days. No obligation. Unlimited meetings for the next 30 days. you know, I know when a company does this that they that's standing behind a product. How do they sell this product? They say try it. Try it free for 30 days. We think you're going to find a lot of ways to use it. I know we do. We use it all the time at Twit. GoToMeeting, and by the way, we pay for our account. And we have several that we pay for because it's so great. GoToMeeting.com/TWIG. Thank you so much for your support of This Week in Google, Citrix. Shall I play this? Now, what is explain, first of all, Jeff, what this cut comes from.
So Rupert Murdoch, who's been saying much of this at the same time, but I just found it amusing. It sounds like the old tubes and pipes discussion from our former senator from
Stevens.
Alaska.
Yeah.
And he was in Washington doing a talk. He's been out there preaching more recently, and it was at I think George Washington University with a journalist. And so I just found it amusing. Maybe you won't, but I thought it was amusing hearing Rupert discover the internet. And by the way, let's remember here as we listen to this that Michael Wolff, his biographer, said that his last knowledge, Rupert had never touched a computer or used Google. Well, now you'll hear that he touches the iPad, if you consider that a computer. Sorry.
This is this, by the way, is Matt Wells, and it is
The Guardian.
From The Guardian. It's their Media Talk podcast. And 15 minutes in on the April 9th episode, this is what you'll hear.
Google taking his journalism for free.
They're going to stop people like Google or Microsoft or whoever taking our stories for nothing.
He's stopping what exactly?
Well, if you go to Google News and you see stories and it says Wall Street Journal, and you tap on it and you suddenly get the page or the story as in the Wall Street Journal. And it's for free.
Right.
And they take it for nothing. And then they've got this very clever business model, which is, and they've invented almost a new type of advertising, search advertising. And so if they just pour out tens of millions of words a day, one way or another, they have keywords in there which tie to advertising beside it. And it's produced a river of gold. And I think they ought to stop it. The newspapers ought to stand up.
Oh, God. And
so
I hope they do stop it, Rupert.
Back in the earliest days of the internet, I held focus groups in Cleveland. And we had people there who sat in there in the earliest days, and they said, you know, there's this amazing company that's bought all the content you can imagine, encyclopedias and medical stuff and news and everything, and it just has everything. It's called Netscape.
Huh.
I honestly think
that's what he thinks.
That the Google is the internet.
So when I go to the Google and I search for my journal and I see my journal
and I click on it, there's the page. That's my stuff. It's free. Yes, you're serving it up.
It's your page. He clearly doesn't know. And I'm surprised that nobody sat down with him. Probably they're scared of him.
You don't want to be the one to do that.
Now, Rupert, let me explain this. We spend millions of dollars a year to put that page on the internet. And if Google didn't point to it, no one would find it. See, they're coming to our site, Rupert. That's us. He clearly doesn't. I mean, I don't understand what he's even saying.
No.
It's
you
like
tap on it.
Is he implying that Google's putting ads on the Wall Street Journal page?
He thinks that Google is creating tons of content a day by doing this. He just doesn't know what this internet is.
In all charitableness, I'm really trying to, because I assume he's an intelligent person. He's been very successful. That I'm trying to understand. You know, presuming that he knows that he paid for that page, I'm trying to understand what he might be thinking. He's probably thinking, well, there would be no value to Google at all if it couldn't link to people. So there, the value that Google has, the billions of dollars that Google is worth, comes from the fact that they link to our content. So does he want money from Google, or does he want them not to do it anymore?
Well, right now he's saying he doesn't want him to do it anymore.
See, that's where he's kind of cuckoo.
Because he could do it right now, but obviously smarter minds in his company are ignoring the boss.
Somebody, Martin Sassenberg, who's a listener in Germany. Oh, Germany, for some reason, has decided, as we've talked about before, that they don't like the Google Street View. And he sent me a obviously photoshopped street sign in from Germany. It has a town name and then a no robots text below it.
Did you ever see
this is the humor I like.
Isn't that good? It's very geeky humor. If I can find it, I'll show you. It's very funny.
Hold on. So you got to see this one. And this is another one. Search for Google Home View on Google. It's in German. It doesn't matter. It's worth the laugh. You'll go to an LA Times page first off.
Yep, I see it.
And then click on that video.
By the way, thank you, Google, for that search. And the LA Times should be thanking Google for that search because now I'm seeing an LA Times page with ads for Verizon, California Lutheran University, all of which is monetized by, not Google, by the LA Times.
And by the way, folks out there, if you really want the translation, the LA Times now, thanks to crowdsourcing, has it. Here's the video.
Google Home View.
Schönen guten Tag. Wir sind von Google Home View und wollen die Fotos machen von Ihrer Wohnung.
I love it that the subtitles of it are in French.
And I have to take pictures of your apartment.
Das fotografiert jetzt fürs Internet.
Yeah, you translate. You speak German.
Also ein Wohnzimmer.
Can we come in? Yes, I have a living room.
Living room.
A bedroom.
Bedroom. Kitchen.
There's the Google man writing it all down.
Und eine Veranda. Sich so umgezwungen einfach vor die, Sie beide vielleicht. Dass ich einfach.
Warum denn, ne?
Ja, damit das ein bisschen belebt aussieht.
Das kennt doch keiner.
So he's leading them through the house. There they are. And it says, are you going through all of Germany? Every house, yeah? Every house in Germany, every piece of furniture.
Erst von außen, dann von innen.
We get the outside and the inside. Would you like to sit on the sofa, please? So they're taking pictures of them sitting on the sofa.
Wieso?
Wir sind gerade beide von Arbeit, sonst ist es ein bisschen ordentlicher bei uns.
Ja,
es ist ein bisschen wie ich gerade auf dem Work
gesehen. Ich weiß, dass wir noch relativ.
Don't worry, we've seen some real pigsties.
At least the bed's made.
Ja. Während, Foto. Foto Schlafzimmer.
Foto Bedroom.
Sie wissen wegen der Datenschutzbestimmung, das muss teilweise gepixelt werden. Sie haben das
We have to have this partially pixelated because of privacy.
Not fully.
Wait till you see this.
So he's pulling out of his briefcase some pixels.
These are pixel boards.
And they're holding them in front of their eyes.
Do you mind holding them in front of your eyes?
Wenn Sie irgendwelche Fragen haben zu Google oder zum Urheberrecht, Datenschutz, wir zeigen ja auch, dass Sie hier keine Reichtümer haben. Das ist ja eher eigentlich nichts, wo man einbrechen würde. Das ist ja auch ein Vorteil.
Gott, haben Sie eine Ahnung, was hier eingebrochen wird?
Google
That
Home
View. House here.
Sie fotografieren uns nicht.
Ich habe Ihr Auto, ich mache mal ein.
He says, no photos.
Hören Sie auf, uns zu fotografieren.
Wenn ich privat fotografiert werde.
Stop taking pictures.
Ich habe das Auto fotografiert.
Uns fotografieren Sie nicht.
Here's our pixel board.
Ich meine, Sie machen das laufen
Also wenn Sie nicht mitspielen, dann stellen wir Ihnen Google ab.
That's the greatest one. If you don't play along with us, we're going to discontinue your Google.
So she lets him in. By the way, I have a feeling these people are real. These are not...
Yeah, as far as I know.
So they don't know. This is not a... I mean, the photographers, the Google people are fake, but the...
That's probably the whole joke. But
right. It's obviously a TV show.
Yeah.
But see, what I want to see is the Home View map now on Google. They didn't do the last step there. That would have been fun. It's from the Heute show. That's very funny. And people believed it.
Well, you know, the Google Street View car was sabotaged in Germany a week ago.
Yeah, they really don't like it, do they?
Yeah, no, they don't. They go wacky on it.
Street View doesn't bother me. Does it? I mean...
It's public. What's public is public.
Right.
If you restrict Google from taking pictures of people doing things in public, then you restrict journalists and citizens as well.
Right. Which many have tried to do.
Yeah. In Germany.
Now, we were talking a little bit about HTML5, and one of the remaining debates over HTML5 is what video codec to use. And this is actually a fairly important debate for open source advocates and people who want an open internet, because the two choices seem to have come down to H.264, which is a very popular codec. In fact, if you're watching our stream, it's an H.264, in some cases wrapped by Flash, in some cases not. But it is an encumbered codec. It's proprietary. There are patents. There's an alternative called AugTheora. And I don't know if it's as good as H.264, but it is open.
And not used as much.
Hardly at all, as far as mm-hmm. I can tell.
Mm-hmm. And Firefox won't support anything but AugTheora, correct?
Yep. Now, apparently, and I'm reading, this is Google's open source blog, google-opensource.blogspot.com. Google's written there's a little post here kind of putting some weight behind AugTheora. And Google has given a grant. They're funding TheoraArm, which is a free optimized for ARM version of Theora. And, of course, that would be important for a lot of portable devices, including the iPad. Hoping to, I think, get Theora a little bit farther along down the line. I would love to see Google throw its weight behind Theora.
And then maybe people would actually use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
We'd support it. I mean, you know, we're tied to the formats that our streaming providers offer. It's been very interesting because ever since Apple deprecated Flash, both Ustream and Justin.tv, two of our providers, have started offering unwrapped, Flash-free versions of the video H.264, which stream beautifully on the iPhone. And if Android supported it, would support stream nicely on the Nexus One. Does stream on the iPad, and that's all happened just lately. And I think because of Apple's stance against Flash, I think Apple really is doing some damage to Flash. But I would love now we would be thrilled if we had a Theora version of our stream. But you know that requires we can't do it. We don't have the resources to do it. That requires our providers doing it. Moving along, YouTube's testing a new video player. This is, I guess, part of their redesign. A video player with more elegant controls.
So say they.
So, the video I just played had those new controls. I was a little puzzled by it.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, what is that?
What is that?
It's a different red thing than usual.
Yeah. And they're dimmed out a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know
if it's a big deal. The other video thing from Google is that Google Video now, when you search for a show like Seinfeld, it gives you the opportunity to get just episodes from each year. But interestingly, you do not have the option to play there. You must go off.
Hmm. Go off to like Hulu?
To whatever site the video is from. So it's merely a search engine.
Well, that's
fun.
It
does not play the videos there.
That's the open web, my friend.
It's good.
That's a good thing, yeah.
For lawyers, too.
In fact, that's one issue. You know, sometimes I worry that Google gives some sort of precedence to YouTube video versus video stored on other sites. And right. I don't know if it's the case or not, but I have to say it definitely prejudices us towards storing our stuff on YouTube. It wasn't enough to get us to use Google Video, however. So
no.
It does help that there's a community there. But that's a way that Google could perhaps... skew things a little bit. Anything else of interest before we get to our tips and tools?
I returned my Nexus One this week.
What?
I swapped it, actually. I didn't return it. I was really sad. I looked down at my phone a couple weeks ago, and I saw like these little specks of dust. In fact, I don't know if you're going to be able to see it.
The dust issue is starting to crop up.
Under the screen, yeah. Yeah. And I was so sad. I mean, I was just like crushed. I was cradling the handset I was like rubbing it against my jeans. Like, is it on the outside? No, it's in the inside. But I called Google support. They connected me to HTC. I said, I have dust under the screen. It's a production. It's an unsealed, you know, the phone seal isn't correct. Actually, Leo, you probably know more about this, but it's a production mistake. They connected me to HTC and they said, okay, we're going to put a $530 hold on your credit card and send you a new phone without dust.
Wow.
If you send your phone back to us within 10 days, we'll release the hold and we don't charge you.
They swapped it.
They swapped it, yeah. And the other option was that I could send them my phone and then be phoneless for like 2 weeks while they sent me another phone. So I opted for the hold because they're not going to charge me. I'm going to send it back.
Yeah,
but
of course.
It was really, really simple. So if you have dust under your Nexus One screen, just call them.
What did it look like? Because after I saw your post, I went, is there dust? I don't know. It's apparent? It's obvious?
It's if you look really closely, there's just tiny little specks under the screen itself. I don't think
People have gotten complaints about that with the iPad as well. I think it's in the nature of capacitance screens and the glass on top of them.
But you know, when I open up the back of my Nexus One, it has tons of dust in it that I can't figure out how it got there.
Oh, weird.
Dust is everywhere.
No, I mean it's dust. It's specks that you can't rub off. It's specks that are obviously trapped underneath. And apparently this is an iPhone thing too. You can return your iPhone if it happens to your iPhone, and they'll swap it out for you. Apple will swap it as well.
Well, this is good news because Google's been getting a lot of heat for their bad support for the Nexus One, their Python-based support.
The Python answer.py. Yeah, no. It was a live human who picked up the phone instantly and connected me to HTC. It was really pretty painless.
That's so.
When I almost returned mine, I had the same experience that they were very responsive, very good, trying to convince me not to, which they should do. But not in an AOL way. And so far, you know, the only time I've tried to do anything, I didn't end up doing it that time.
Yeah, I mean, they asked me how I like the phone. I mean, the great thing is you take out the battery, you take out the SIM card, and I know when I boot up my new phone, which I have, I just haven't started it yet. All my Android settings are stored in the cloud. I'll sign in and everything will be just as it was. I'm not sure actually if apps, but certainly my wallpaper.
It restores apps.
Restores apps and widgets too. I'm very excited about that. So then I just drop the other one. You know, I'm going to sign out of the one with the dust, you know, the dusty one, and drop it in the box, and I'm done. Well, so
that reminds me, a question. So I did an interview this week for AARP magazine, no cracks, please, about the iPad, and the reporter said, you know, this is being talked about as grandma's computer, which I think insults grandma. Grandma's been online for 15 years, but anyway, he said, don't you have to own a PC or a Mac to sync?
Yes.
To iTunes?
Yes. It's a peripheral.
It's very problematic.
It is. And the Nexus, or Android in general, I mean, listen, the iPhone and the iPad does a lot of things better than Android does. But the one thing that Android does very, very well is just this idea of like sign in once, all your stuff's on your device.
It's all
in
the cloud.
Yep. Right. No syncing.
When I moved from the Droid to the Nexus One, I was shocked because it was instantly had my wallpaper, all the applications started downloading. Was amazing.
That's why one thing I will do is if I can get my hands on the WePad and stick SIM in and do it there, right? It should just sync it basically, right?
It should. It should, yeah. If you sign in with the same Google account, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, isn't that neat?
Oh, God, now I got to remember which Google account I use.
That's another problem. Here's one kind of cool story, just kind of a last story. Google Earth helps unearth new human species in South Africa. Paleoanthropologists, Professor Lee Berger at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, used Google Earth over the last 2 years to locate more than 500 previously undiscovered caves and fossil sites. Wow.
Cool how I guess you can just see the indentations and things. And this was a very well-explored area. Even so, they found pay dirt.
And a new human species, Australopithecus sediba, an upright walker that shared many physical traits with the earliest known species of the genus Homo.
Who should be known as Homo Googleus.
I hope they
do. There's anything right in the world.
Wouldn't that be great? And they've added some new features to Google Earth. I think it's Google Earth Oceans, which I think is, you know, they added outer space and now inner space. Google has added layers of information and annotations for all the oceans. So if you've got Google Earth, you can start to look and see more about the oceans. Last year, I didn't know this, all the oceans were 3D mapped and video and photos were added for good measure. Now they're adding the information as well.
Wow. So like there are Google's ocean submarines equipped with cameras going out.
Robots.txt.
Sonar.
There's some coral reefs that have a robots.txt file prohibiting entry.
It's actually
I envision Flipper with something on his head now.
I represent Google Ocean. I think it's really great. Really great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Homo Googleus. That would make Googleus. Homos everywhere happy.
Hey, baby, we're all homos.
We are.
We're all homos. Let's move on. Tip, tool, and number, starting with Gina Trapani's tip of the week.
My tip this week is a shameless Android plug. This is for folks who have been thinking about switching to Android but aren't sure whether or not they want to because they don't know what apps are available. I had a listener write me an email saying, hey, you know, I've got this iPhone and my 9-year-old has just been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And we're going to use, you know, a smartphone to kind of keep records and keep on top of his illness. And I'm thinking about switching to Android, but I don't know if Android has any diabetes related apps because I need a handset to actually search the market. Right. There are a few featured apps on the site, but no apps that you can't search the market on the web. But you actually can. There's a site called at DoubleTwist. DoubleTwist is a great media manager. You can sync with an Android device.
I use it and I love it.
Yeah, me too. A little slow, but I like it.
Hey, it works.
If you go to apps.doubletwist.com, it's a web front end to search the Android market. So you can check out what apps are available. I mean, you know, you basically get the information that you would get if you were looking in the Android market, reviews and ratings, but everything's there. So if you're wondering if Android has an app similar to something you're running on the iPhone or some other system, you can search there. So apps.doubletwist.com.
That is really great. Thanks to a DVD John, because that's his company, Double Twist.
The guy, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. The guy who cracked CSS. And
thanks, DVD John.
Thanks, DVD John, once again.
Right on.
He's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I didn't know that.
So you search for Twitter, there's 1,222 results for Twitter.
None of them say the Twitter app.
Right? None of them say the Twitter app.
And we come full circle.
Yeah. Actually, wait, there is an entry that just says Twitter, but the bird is looking kind of janky. Yeah, it's clearly not.
That's a wry fake bird, yes.
Yeah.
And the first review was, what a piece of crap.
That, I have to say, there's one thing that is true about, the Android marketplace is they're not all great apps.
Yeah, that's true.
Let a million crappy apps bloom.
Right.
I don't think that is Jeff's number.
It is. It is. It leads directly to the number, Leo, like you planned it this way.
I kind of did.
Okay.
I think I knew what your number was.
It's the only number you could find.
I stayed away from it. Yes.
We're nice enough to stay away. All right. More than 9,000 Android apps were added in March. That's just short of double the 5,500 in February.
That's amazing.
A nice big upswing here. Actually, 9,308 in March. And the total, which is what I'm interested in, is the 42,000 downloadable apps. That's 100,000 shy of Apple's 140,000. And, of course, some of the Android ones are crappy. But there's growth here. So if you go back to June of 2008, there were 6,000 apps, but that's not surprising then. Finally, the numbers here, according to AndroLib.com, are that 59.6% of Android applications are free versus 27% of iPhone applications are free.
Huh. That's interesting.
So the number I don't have that I really want to have is, what's the installed base of the two OSs now? Of customers.
That's a good question. I can't find it
anywhere. So chat room. Hello, chat room.
Well, I can give you the number for the iPod Touch and the iPhone, because Steve quoted it on Thursday. It was 85 million. I doubt very much there's 85 million Android.
Android's got a way to go.
I can pretty much assure you it's not close.
And that's great that there are more Android apps. I mean, of course, it's not, you don't care about quantity as much as you care about quality, but I think the quantity sort of leads to quality, for apps to just really start to distinguish themselves and get really good. So that those are great growth numbers.
That, by the way, is an issue if you're going to do an Android tablet. One of the things that's really succeeded on the iPad is these native iPad apps, which are, I mean, it's a big difference between doubling an app and actually making an app for this screen size. And I don't know if you're going to see Android developers step up in the same way.
It'll be interesting to see, because with all that extra real estate, you really can do a lot more.
Makes a big difference. I mean, when I look at what Zagat has done or Zillow has done, and these are free upgrades, most of them are not. Mm-hmm. But it really makes a big difference.
I use TweetDeck. I love TweetDeck on the desktop, and I imagine on the iPad it's excellent.
It's similar to the desktop. They finally have the room for those columns.
Yeah, you have enough room to do more columns, right?
Yeah. It's very similar. It looks exactly like the desktop app. And then there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
My tip of the week comes from our good friend Matt Cutts, and it's a little trick using Google's URL shortener, goo.gl. If you append .qr after the goo.gl URL, you do goo.gl.qr, you will get a QR code. It will generate one of those 2D barcodes, which is kind of wild. Now, the real problem is, how do you use Google's URL shortener? And there are very not many ways to do it.
you have to like know where the bookmarklet is or run the toolbar, right?
Yeah, if you use Chrome, there's a Chrome extension that does it.
Mm.
Still, I think it's kind of cool. Apparently, though, not so difficult to generate QR codes. And in fact, there's a lot of different ways to do this. Here's one from a reader added to my friend feed post, or Matt's friend feed post. snapmyinfo.com/QR will do the same thing. In fact, you can take any arbitrary text and make a QR code. Maximum of 512 characters. Now is the time for all good homos to come to the aid of their country. This would be good to just put this on your URL. Wonder how fast it is. So there you go. A QR code just for you. And of course, nice. You can scan that in with your Droid phone. Do you use a particular app? Either of you for your Nexus One to read QR codes and other codes?
It's just called barcode scanner.
But I've never had the opportunity to do it.
Barcode scanner. I think it comes. Does it come with it? I think it does.
No. I think I installed barcode scanner.
Okay. I can't remember. But anyway, it's easy to get. You could search Double Twist and find it.
Yeah. Yep.
Gina Trapani is the author of The Complete Guide to Google Wave. Any new Wave stuff going on?
Some new, let's see, what was the last Wave thing that happened? Oh, just the April Fool's prank about the notifications. Otherwise, not too much. Although I think that I get the feeling that they're gearing up to launch some Wave-related stuff at Google I.O.
They're due.
Next month.
Yes.
They are due.
We were talking before the show. You're going to Google I.O. Are you going to go, Jeff, to Google I.O.?
Nope. Because I'm not. I'm a pretend. I'm fake. I can't develop crap.
Well, I'll inquire, but I wonder if we could cover it in some way.
Ooh. Yeah, that'd be great. Well, I'll be there, so I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
Help out with that, however I can. I mean, of course, I'd love to have you there in the flesh, Leo. But if you're not, I'd be happy to do some coverage.
I'm gonna look into that and see if we can bring our patented camera staff.
Ooh, that'd be awesome.
And go around and cover Google I/O.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, well, the folks at Ustream have said, anytime you want to borrow the live Ustream or live view,
the live staff, the streaming staff.
The magic staff.
Yes. Good.
Gandalf staff. You can read the book and buy your very own copy online at CompleteWaveGuide.com. And, of course, Gina's blog is a must read. Put it in your newsreader if you don't want to go to the site every
single
day.
Even when she's bored by the discussion of the iPad, she's fascinated.
Wow, I'm impressed. Your filters are good, Leo. I didn't think you'd catch that.
Oh, I catch it all. I see everywhere. Yeah, smarterware.org.
And follow White House this week on Twitter and answer the question, what should we do when it comes out this week?
If you have an opinion.
If you have an opinion.
Don't just make
that
up
that never
something.
Stopped anybody online.
Yeah, I know. What is it George Burns said? It's too bad all the people know how to run the country are driving cabs and cutting hair. Jeff Jarvis is the man at BuzzMachine.com and the author of What Would Google Do? And your new book is out. Are you writing it now? Are you working on it?
No, I got one page in. I think I'm going to change. The talk I'm giving in Germany, I'm trying to convince my editor that that's the topic.
He's reboxing his book.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, so no more beta?
That's called beta, yes.
But no, it's still beta. Like okay.
I love the name.
I love the name. I love the whole idea.
The beauty of the name is you can make it anything you want.
It's true.
That's the problem.
You can make it about Aquaria.
That's just the problem. I'll see. I'm going to see. I got some plane time and some Google time. I'm going to sit in the sauna and think in Germany.
Yeah. But you'll catch Jeff at BuzzMachine.com. And What Would Google Do is the book, available on Amazon and everywhere else as well.
For those German listeners, I'll be speaking at Republika in Berlin on Wednesday about German paradox about publicness and privacy.
Will you be back?
I'll be back, yes.
In time for next week's episode?
Yes.
Man, you must be exhausted. That's a lot.
Driving to Rochester and back last night was exhausting.
That's bad. Yeah, I'm about to do the college trips myself. All right, Jeff, Gina, we'll see y'all later. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, you can watch this show. We do it set now. I want to talk to you two about moving it to another day. So don't hang up right after the show because I would like to talk about that. But right now, at least for now, Saturday afternoons, 5:15 Eastern time, 2:15 Pacific. That's 21:15 UTC, those of you living in Bonn. At live.twit.tv, you can also subscribe on iTunes or anywhere else finer video and audio podcasts are aggregated. And, of course, we're on YouTube, too, at youtube.com/twit. Look in the Twig channel. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on This Week at Google.